still emailing me all hours of the day and night. I couldn't figure out what time frame you were on because it didn't seem to matter what time I emailed him. He was still answering.
Yes.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the afternoon session of the February 12th Portland City Council meeting. Will you please call the roll? Yes.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Saltzman?
Here.
Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. Okay, we have one item this afternoon. Would you read that, Carla?
Item 153, appeal of SEIU Local 49 against the Design Commission's decision to approve the application of TVA Architects for the Park Avenue West Tower, a new 30-story mixed-use building at 728 Southwest 9th Avenue, LU 13214772DZMMSAD.
Great. Thanks, everyone. This is a quasi-judicial land use hearing, and it's conducted in a very set and prescribed way. So I'll have the city attorney describe the procedural issues and how we take this up this afternoon.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. There are several announcements I'm required by state law to make at the outset of the hearing. They'll describe the kind of hearing we're having today, the order of testimony, and some guidelines for presenting testimony. First, this is an evidentiary hearing. This means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. Today's hearing, in terms of order of testimony, will begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the City Council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present the appellant's case. Following the appellant, individuals who support the appeal will go next. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to the City Council. Next will be the principal opponent, in this case the applicant, who will have 15 minutes to address the City Council and rebut the appellant's presentation. After the appellant, the Council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. And finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents of the appeal. The council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is a tentative vote, which is what I recommend to the council today, the council will set a future date for the adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If the council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before the city council. I'd like to describe several guidelines for those who will be speaking to the City Council today. First, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record should be given to the Council Clerk after you testify. Similarly, the original of any slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the Council during your testimony, including PowerPoint presentations, should be given to the Council Clerk to make sure they become part of the record. Any testimony, arguments, and evidence you present must be directed toward the applicable approval criteria for this land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code that you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report to the council. You must raise an issue clearly enough to give the council and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue. If you don't, you will be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. And finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues related to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow the council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes the announcements I'm required to make.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Does anyone have any conflicts of interest or ex parte contacts to declare?
Mayor, let me start. I'm advised by the city attorney's office that having read the editorial opinion in the Oregonian on this subject and an op-ed piece on this subject, that they constitute ex parte contact. And that may be a strict ruling, but that's the advice we got, so I'm disclosing that I've read both.
I have the same disclosure.
Others?
I didn't read either, and I haven't met with anybody about this.
Same disclosure.
Yeah, I'm pleased to say I've been out of town and haven't read any newspapers, but I have had occasional informal contacts with both SEIU and the applicant for this project on subjects other than the appeal, and none of them, I don't believe, constitutes an ex parte contact on the appeal itself. So does anyone have any questions about the council's disclosures? Because it's important that we're an objective body, and when we do this quasi-judicial decision-making, as opposed to the policy-making the council does, we're supposed to be an impartial review body here. So anybody have any questions about the council's disclosures? If not, then let's start the hearing itself and have the appellant's presentation, please. I'm sorry, staff report first, then the appellant's presentation. I won't jump the gun.
Good afternoon. My name is Kara Fioravanti. I'm BDS staff.
BDS is the Bureau of Development Services.
Thank you. I am going to start with a summary of the procedure for this land use review application. It was submitted in October of 2013. There was a staff report and recommendation issued in early November that recommended approval. On November 21st, there was the first design commission hearing. At that hearing, SEIU Local 49, which is the Service Employees International Union, testified and requested to keep the record open for an additional 21 days to submit testimony. During that time, several letters were submitted by SEIU and the applicant. At the close of the record on December 12th, final findings were prepared for the Design Commission recommending approval again. And at the second Design Commission hearing, the Commission adopted the final findings for approval. The approval was appealed by SEIU Local 49 on January 7th, and here we are today. The land use review application included several components, and I'll go through each of those for you. First, a design review to review the new proposed 30-story mixed-use building, which is referred to as Park Avenue West Tower. You might have also seen it as PAWT. The tower is 460 feet tall, which is the maximum allowed by the code. There's two floors of retail at the ground level, 15 floors of housing within the body of the building for 203 apartments, and 13 floors of office at the top of the building. There's 259 below-grade parking spaces as well. There were two zoning code standards not met by this proposed tower, and they were requested as modifications in this application to the spire height and the reduced loading stall size. Also as part of this application was a Central City Master Plan, and I have a slide that goes into greater detail on this. But basically, the request is to take the development potential of Director Park on that 20,000-square-foot block and move almost all of it to this tower site so that the tower builds the full potential of the two blocks.
Can I just ask you, do you know offhand whether the 259 below-grade parking spaces are connected to the parking below Director Park and then the other adjacent building?
They are not. Yeah.
Totally separate.
Correct. And then finally, there was an adjustment request to allow parking access for this building from Park Avenue. The zoning for the site, which is a two-block site, is CXD, which is Central Commercial with Design Overlay. The site is within the Central City Plan District, the downtown subdistrict, and the approval criteria for all the components of the application include the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines for the design review, their zoning code criteria for the modifications and the adjustment, and then finally, the master plan. Those criteria are also included in the zoning code, one of which requires that the proposal be consistent with the Central City Plan functional policies. And here we see the two-block site with the streets indicated. This is the proposed building. Between Morrison and Yamhill are two light rail alignments. And south of that is Director Park, which is bound by Yamhill and Taylor. Southwest 9th and Park straddle these two blocks, which are our two skinny streets lining the park blocks of Central City. This plan, real quick, shows retail wrapping and facing Yamhill and Morrison. The main large lobby shared by both the residents and the office users faces Southwest 9th. And finally, Southwest Park includes the parking access and the loading, which faces the Nordstrom loading across Park Avenue. I'm going to summarize a lot of the land use history that has happened on these two blocks over the years. Starting with in 2005 was the beginning of the two-block vision for this development. A Central City Parking Review did approve an underground parking garage under Director Park that is connected to Fox Tower. In 2007, there were a few staff-level design reviews approving the small buildings in Director Park. Also in 2007, there was a Type 3 land use review application that's very similar to today's. And that application was to review a 33-story tower, which you see here, taller than today's tower. And that included retail at the ground level, office, and then condo units up at the top of the building. The requests were similar for the modifications, adjustments, and the FAR transfer. Underground permits were actually issued for that building, and construction did begin with the underground work back in 07. This land use review was superseded in 2009, which I'll get to in a moment. Also in 2007, there was a Type 3 review to allow vehicle access within 75 feet of the max alignment. That remains in effect, and this current proposal takes advantage of that allowance. Then in 2009, there was a staff-level design review approving minor design changes to the skin of the building, the 33-story tower. And then later in the year, when the economy went south, there was yet another land use review application to approve a much smaller building, a 26-story tower that included retail and office only. That application included modifications, adjustments, and an FAR transfer allowed. That FAR transfer does have standing today, and that 9.1:1 FAR transfer that happened is not up for discussion today because that's already approved. Another thing to note is that some of the structural work for this tower, permits were issued for that, and that's why construction is beginning today if you've been by the site. One thing I neglected to mention, sorry, in that 2007 Type 3 design review, that application was appealed to City Council back in 07 by different people for different reasons, but City Council did approve that request.
Could you just clarify what you said a second ago, that there have been permits issued for some structural work? So what does that encompass? I mean,
The core of the building is under construction through permits, and I think it's the first 10 floors. I might be wrong. It might be 13 floors, but it's the core of the building, so the stair and the elevator tower that is within the center of the building. Okay. That permit was issued because this 2009 design review still has standing.
That's never been rescinded. It's just
Correct.
Still in effect.
Correct.
Okay.
Real quick, the height modification was easily approved by Design Commission. The building itself does not exceed the maximum height. It actually touches it at 460 feet tall right here. It's the spire right here. It's allowed to be 10 feet above the height limit. It's 41 feet above the height limit. The loading standards also needed a modification request. It's a very efficient loading layout, which works for this tall building, and that was easily approved as well through
Design. You mean it's smaller than we would otherwise expect? Or?
To be more specific, the requirement is for two loading spaces. What they proposed is one full size, which it's very hard to see here. This is the full size.
Right.
One substandard here, and then a dedicated trash. So the trash is extra beyond what code requires. It's these two spaces which kind of need to share the space. If a substandard truck is here, they could share it together. But if a full size loading is here, the substandard space can't be used by another truck. And then finally, all four streets on this block are designated as parking access restricted streets. So if this project wanted to build parking and have its own access point, we needed to process an adjustment for one of the streets to have that. Obviously, Morrison and Yamhill are not the streets to do that on, and Park was noted to be the best street for that. I'm going to dive in a little more to that FAR transfer request because it's a little confusing with a lot of math here, so bear with me. The two sites, both are 20,000 square feet in size. Both have a base FAR of 9:1. FAR is floor area ratio. That means 9 times the site area could be built in square footage. That totals 180,000 square feet per block. If the projects achieve bonuses allowed through the zoning code, an additional 3:1 is allowed. So each block has a maximum potential of 12:1. Director Park achieved its extra 3:1 through bike locker and water feature. And Park Avenue West Tower achieves the extra 3:1 by providing the housing that it does. So the request is to take almost all of this development potential and move it to this tower. And a little history, which I touched on earlier. In 2007, Director Park did receive approval to allow an 11.7:1 transfer, which the 33-story tower needed at the time. In 2009, that was revised and taken down to 9.1:1 transfer, simply because the tower was reduced to 26 stories. As I mentioned, that remains in effect. So 2.9:1 FAR does remain at the park site today. The current request for the 30-story tower needs, again, the 11.7:1 transfer. So the request under this application is to transfer an additional 2.6:1 FAR from Director Park to the tower.
Can I just ask you a very basic question on that? Who actually controls the FAR that is subject to transfer at Director Park?
Director Park.
In light of the fact that there was a donation of the land to the city for purpose of public park?
That's a good question. The ownership, and maybe the applicant could elaborate, but the ownership of Director Park is of the block itself is a condo ownership, where there's two condos, one being TMT, one being the city. I don't know how it was structured in terms of who owns what and who has control of what. What I do know is that TMT does have control and ownership of the underground parking, and I do know that the Parks Bureau maintains the park, but how that private agreement was structured, I'm not sure who actually owns the FAR rights.
Is that an issue before us?
No. No. What we're doing is allowing the ability for the FAR transfer to happen. How it happens through the covenant that's required prior to us issuing permits is between the two ownerships, if in fact it is two ownerships. Maybe it's structured where it's just TMT transferring. But that agreement and those negotiations would happen to create the covenant that makes the transfer after this land use review allows the transfer to happen, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I had the same question. Thank you.
Okay. So between Design Commission hearings 1 and 2 and within the past couple of days, the appellant provided several letters raising appeal issues. This slide attempts to summarize those. It's a very brief summary, and I'll hit on each of these. To begin, the appellant contends the city erred by not requiring affordable housing as a component of a Central City Master Plan approval. The appellant relies on Policy 3C of the Central City Plan. Policy 3 is the housing policy, which states in this slide, maintain the Central City status as Oregon's principal high-density housing area by keeping housing production in pace with new job creation. The policy is elaborated with ways in which the policy can be met through a handful of further statements within the Central City Plan, 3C being one of those statements, which goes on to say, further, encourage the development of housing in a wide range of types and prices and rent levels. Some of these statements don't apply to this project. Some of the statements are aspirational and intended to guide future city legislation in the creation of new regulations, 3C, in our opinion, being one of those statements. And all of the statements relate to the Greater Central City Plan District as a whole. Not all the projects subject to the policies bear the burden of providing a variety of housing types, but the Central City does. This project provides 15 floors of housing for 203 market-rate apartments and aids the Central City in providing an abundance of housing types. Another statement was made that there is no evidence that the owner, Portland Parks and Rec, will transfer the FAR. And I touched on this a little with your question, Commissioner Fish. This is a two-step process to transfer FAR. First, through land use review, you need to receive allowance from the city to do so. Then the private property owners negotiate, create a covenant, submit that to the city, and then we could release permits to build that extra transferred floor area. TMT is fully aware that they are required to create a covenant that transfers an additional 3:1 FAR to the tower. Another statement states that greater than 3:1 FAR transfer is not allowed in downtown. The zoning code allows greater than 3:1 transfer in downtown through the Central City Master Plan process. The zoning code states Central City Master Plan allows flexibility in FAR transfers. Another statement made, the absence of affordable housing is inconsistent with the Federal Fair Housing Act and may expose the city to liability. We don't administer federal regulations and policies. We administer our own regulation and policies, which in their formation were informed by others. I think I need another minute, if that's okay. Thank you. So our regulations obviously were informed by others. We're also party to an adopted fair housing plan, which commits the city to reducing and eliminating housing discrimination. This plan commits the city and other parties to address impediments to housing choice in a variety of ways, including increasing equitable housing opportunities as part of the comprehensive plan update. It's implemented through a myriad of city policies and not intended to apply to individual land use approvals for development projects. The zoning for the site is CX, and that does allow a variety of housing types. And just a few recent Central City projects providing affordable housing include Bud Clark Commons, Gray's Landing, Pearl Court, and Station Place. There's another statement bringing to our attention. There's a restrictive covenant on Director Park between the private parties that states development cannot occur on Director Park. That may be true, but it doesn't supersede the zoning code. It doesn't take away the maximum 12-to-1 FAR potential for Director Park. So for zoning purposes, there still is a chunk of FAR that can be transferred. So this restrictive covenant doesn't take that away from the ownership. And finally, there were procedural issues raised by the appellant. We feel throughout the process we've met our procedural requirements, and those are noted in the final decision. I am not going to discuss the building because I'm out of time, but I know Bob Thompson will describe the building at its ground level and the tower design, and I'll end with your council options. You could grant the appeal and overturn the Design Commission's decision of approval, which would deny the proposal. You could grant components of the appeal and add conditions of approval to the Design Commission decision of approval. Or you could deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission decision of approval.
Okay. Questions for Tara? Might have some later, but I think you've answered them for now. Okay. Thank you very much. And is there any other staff presentation from other bureaus, or are we going to move on into the appellant? Okay. So now we're ready for the appellant's case. Come on up.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is David Knorr, and I'm a lawyer. Office is at 217 East Main in Hillsborough, and I'm here representing the appellant, SEIU Local 49. You should have with you this pamphlet that is, with two minor exceptions, small exceptions, material that was submitted earlier. I wanted to make sure you had it as a hard copy if you have questions as we move along today. These materials include material that we submitted to the Design Commission, as well as a summary letter dated yesterday that outlines our principal arguments for you today. But before I get to those arguments, I'd like to talk for a moment about vision. The City of Portland had a vision for the park blocks that goes back a long time. It was a really important vision. But as things have evolved, the Midtown park blocks developed, unlike the North and South. And our comprehensive planning has recognized that some development is appropriate in that Midtown Park Block area. But the way it was planned was for limited density, limited height there with, as your planning staff has already summarized, a 9.0-to-1 floor area ratio. Now, the floor area ratio kind of works in tandem with height limitations, but it's sort of separate. And part of what that 9.0-to-1 does is reduces the impact on our vision of the park blocks that stretches from one end to the other so that we don't have a huge building in the middle of it. The comprehensive plan and the zoning code also limit what you can do to increase that to a 3.0-to-1 transfer. And the only way you can get beyond that 12.0-to-1 FAR is if you go through the master plan process. And what the master plan process requires you to do is to look at your broader policies in the Central City Plan. And that's what we're asking you to do today, to look at those broader policies concerning housing, to show some vision yourselves now. We've lost irrevocably when this unit goes in, when this project goes in, that old vision of park blocks extending that entire area without interruption, park blocks that are accessible to all of the public of all incomes. And what we're going to have there now is a tower with housing, with offices for the city's leading law firm, and commercial activity there. What we're asking you to do is show some vision. When you're giving up this park block area, ask for a little bit more than what we're seeing so far. Ask for some affordable housing so that what's available to folks who work in the downtown area and can't afford high-end rents can also share in this project.
Norton, just before you continue, the packet you gave us of materials for this hearing has a couple of letters in it which appear to be from interested parties. They're actually in Spanish, not English. For those of us that are not bilingual and may want to look at these, do you happen to have English translations?
Thank you for asking. My apologies. I mentioned there were a couple of items that were, in the packet that had not been submitted already. These are the written testimony for two union members who intend to present oral testimony today, and we provided them in part to assist your translator. They will be presenting in Spanish with oral translation.
Okay, great.
And we'll have those two union members and a union staff person following me up here today. So when we're looking at the Central City Plan policy to encourage housing in a broad range of prices and rents, the Design Commission said, well, that's only an aspirational goal, and it's not something that an application has to address. And typically, aspirational goals, if you have a permit application, don't come into play. But this is an unusual situation, in part because we have this master plan where we're basically saying we will trump what's in your zoning code and we will allow you to do other things, but only if you look at these broader policies. But also, and more importantly, the property that's being transferred off of Block 5 does belong to the city. The 2.6 FAR that is being asked for is going to have to come from the city. And until the city says, yes, we will do that, until there's some evidence that that transfer is going to occur, the applicant really hasn't met their burden of proof with showing that this 30-story tower is allowed. It's only allowed if that transfer occurs, and there's no evidence that the transfer will occur. All we've got at this point is a letter from the Parks Director saying, we're open to discussion on it. We're not going to object to the land use application, but the Parks Director is very clear that this is city property, and we haven't agreed to anything on it yet. Commissioner Fish inquired, is the ownership of the FAR at issue in this case? And this is one point that I have to take issue with staff on. I feel it's very much at issue in this case. Even though the city's code does not require the owner of property to be a party to an application, I believe state law requires it, as I've indicated in my materials, but your code doesn't. It allows an applicant to submit an application on somebody else's property and assert in the application that they're conferring with the property owner. And then the application just says, well, it's up to the property owner to object or to raise concerns, and the city's not going to guarantee anything along those lines. Well, here we've got the city as the property owner, and the city has not agreed to this. And we feel that until the city agrees with it, there shouldn't be any approval of this application.
Can I ask you, Council, if you know, what is the consideration that the city is receiving for the transfer of the FAR?
At this point, I don't believe any has been offered. I'm not aware of any that has been offered. And I think that's kind of up for grabs at this point. And you know, I know that the Parks and Recreation Department would like to make use of any consideration that comes from that. There are probably other bureaus that would like to make use of any consideration that comes from that, whether it's cash or in-kind contributions. We feel that one of the things that you can and should ask for is consideration for that. And you're kind of wearing two hats in this because you're a property owner on the one hand, but you're a regulator on the other hand. As a property owner, we think you should be asking for, as part of the consideration that you get for the transfer, some component of affordable housing. That's, I agree with staff that that's separate, but I don't agree with staff that that's irrelevant to what we're doing here today. Because until you've got that agreement or some commitment from the city that that's going to occur, we don't really know whether or not this project is going to happen. They haven't provided evidence that the project's going to happen.
is it your view, just so I understand, that this is not covered by the prohibition against inclusionary zoning because the city is conferring some discretionary benefit to the applicant and therefore could condition the transfer?
I think that the city could condition the transfer. Well, let me put it this way. I believe the city can deny the application because there's not evidence that the transfer will occur. I also think the city can deny the application because the applicant has not demonstrated compliance with the housing policy if the council chooses to interpret the housing policy that way in this case.
But just to be clear, my understanding of state law is that we cannot compel a developer to put affordable units in their development unless it's conditioned on the conferring some benefit. So we're prohibited from implementing inclusionary zoning.
And my opening remarks about the vision, I think, come into play here. There is a substantial benefit being conferred here. They start out with 9.0 FAR on that block. Under the zoning code, they could get 12. They're asking under the master plan to get almost 24. You don't have to give them that. If you're going to give them that, we're saying get some affordable housing in return. At least better variety in rents so that we are not making that an enclave for the wealthy there in the middle of the park.
This is a design review application, and what we heard from staff is that the negotiation about whether it can actually be done is a separate deal between the Parks Bureau and the developer. What we're being asked to do today is to review the design review. So unless there's something that's in there's a more compelling case in the comprehensive plan and in the approval criteria that says there has to be some affordable housing, why isn't that the next part of it? And yes, indeed, that they may be told no from parks eventually, and then they wouldn't be able to do this. But that's a different matter from whether this design review is approved.
Commissioner Fritz, design review is one component of this, and we're not here about design review. We're here about the master plan. It's the master plan that has to be modified. There was a master plan in 2007 for some transfer. There was a master plan in 2009 that is still operative that reduced that amount of transfer. Now they're asking to change the master plan again and bump it up to the maximum that they can get out of Park Block 5. Now, the transfer to the city, the improvements that the city made that created the bonus FAR, those happened after 2009. And you'll see it at the end of the packet of materials here is the email from Director of Parks and Recreation, and attached to that is the covenant that details the status of the FAR on Park Block 5, and it memorializes the earlier transfer and recognizes that the city is committed to that earlier transfer of the 9.0 FAR, but clearly reserves to the city's ownership the remaining FAR.
Council, just following up on what Commissioner Fritz said, and for the benefit of people that are here, you know, participating and watching, when you're finished and we have a chance to hear from other parties, I mean, one of the principal questions we have to ask every time we have a hearing is, what is the issue before us, and what legally are we allowed to review? So this is a very important question about making sure we stay in our lane, and it doesn't signal one way or another whether we think any of these other concerns that are being raised are valid or not. But we have to be especially careful that we are focused on what we are allowed to by statute and are considering factors that are relevant to this appeal. And sometimes we find that there are hearings where issues are raised, but they're really better raised in another forum. And we are bound ultimately by the directions we have by council and the guidance under the statute. So that's the purpose of Commissioner Fritz's question, and I will be asking similar questions to make sure that the issues that you're raising, whether they are meritorious or not, are appropriate for this forum.
Mr. Narn, along those same lines, although I'm sure this will sound like a very uninformed question, is it possible that we could deny this appeal today, but then if the city owns the FAR credits, subsequently say, if you want our FAR credits, then you have to do the following things?
I believe that that's something you could negotiate with respect to the consideration you're going to get for the FAR credits. Deny the application today, and I believe you have sound grounds for denying the application.
Deny the appeal today. Can we uphold the application, but then still subsequently have a negotiation over the transfer of the FAR credits?
I believe you will have to have a negotiation on the transfer of the FAR credits, yes, Commissioner.
So we do here today won't settle that issue?
I don't think it'll settle that issue, but it will leave the public out of that discussion.
Thank you.
But why do you say we'll leave the public out? We represent the public. So why if the mayor and the commissioner in charge of the Bureau are engaged in that discussion, why does that leave the public out of it?
I should have chosen my words better, Commissioner. I greatly respect your ability, the ability of all of you to represent the public. The level of public participation would be different in that process.
That may be true.
Fair enough. Okay. Other questions before we let him proceed further?
The clock has been stopped every time we do this, so you're going to, you still have your time.
Okay. Keep going then, please, Dave.
With respect to trying to stay within the lanes, my letter of February 11th, which is in your packet of materials, and it's three or four pages back, is where my letter begins, and it provides the best summary of our arguments at this point.
It raises a question in my mind. Who are you representing here today?
I'm representing SEIU Local 49, and I have at the Design Commission represented Adela.
Okay, but you do not represent the Housing Land Advocates?
I do not, no.
They have put in a statement separate.
That's correct.
Also dated February 11th.
Yes.
Okay.
And I would say, let me, if I could, just move on to this issue of Fair Housing Act related issues. Because you did ask that I stay within the lanes, and I want to explain why that element has been raised in my letter and why it's touched on in the letter from HLA. When we're talking about the choices you can make on this master plan application and how you're going to interpret your central city plan policy, which says encourage housing, what we're urging you to do is interpret that in these unusual circumstances where the city is a party to the transfer to say we have maybe a little higher standard for how we encourage it when we have this sort of an application. Now, the discussion from me and from HLA about providing affordable housing and removing barriers to fair housing is really context for that land use question. How should you interpret it? And our point is that when you are making a choice whether to approve or deny this, and if you feel you can make that choice based on the interpretations that are available to you, one of the things you should be looking at is what are your other responsibilities as a recipient of federal funds to encourage the access to fair housing? And HLA's point is that you have these obligations. They've been identified. Some of the concerns about access to housing in the downtown area have been identified in the documents that you provide to the federal government in your identification of barriers to housing. And so just in terms of context, you should give some thought to, if we don't make that choice now to require some affordable housing here, or at least deny this application, go into negotiations, and do the best we can on it, then at some point down the line, we're going to look back over our shoulder and say, I wish we'd have done that. Because at some point down the line, as the federal government ratchets up its review on how jurisdictions are complying with the Fair Housing Act, they're going to be looking at how do you do land use decisions. That's one of the things they can and should look at in, under the Fair Housing Act. And what HLA is saying and what we're saying is, in terms of context, you have an opportunity here. And we're urging you to take it.
Just to be clear, there's no question that in this case that there are no federal funds that are being invested in this development, correct?
That's correct.
Well, and this will be a question that we're going to want to pose to staff as well. You're making an argument, if I paraphrase it, that the plan policy that talks about a diversity of housing choices should be applied to a particular building rather than to the net effect of multiple applications across the central city. I believe that's a novel proposal. In other words, I don't believe there have been any previous master plan cases in which an argument was made that the diversity of housing choice goal had to be accomplished in an individual building, which is what led, I believe, to Commissioner Fish's question about why we get around the state prohibition against inclusionary zoning in this case if we followed your rationale. But, you know, it would be possible. Well, that's a question I want to pose to you as well as to staff, is you're going to have to make the case that we cross the Rubicon here and say, okay, now we're going to start imposing the diversity of housing choices requirement building by building.
Mayor, I'm not aware that anyone else has raised this argument on master plans, and the reason we're raising it is precisely because the city is, in effect, a party to the transfer. They own the FAR that's going to be transferred that is necessary for this project to occur. And so it's not just an applicant who's coming in with the project that we're talking about complying with the policy. It's the applicant with its project and the city as the owner of this FAR.
So just to be clear, because I think you stated it very nicely, in your view, if there was no transfer of FAR from Director Park to this development, then you would not have an issue, correct?
Well, I'd have tough sledding, Commissioner, if I made that argument. But, yes, that's correct. I think that would be a very difficult argument to make.
But we, in turn, would then be clearly bound by what is existing zoning and ground rules for that site. But your hook, at least in your argument to us right now, is that the city is engaged in a discretionary act of transferring something of value to this project, and from that it has the right to establish conditions for that act.
Yes. Two points, though. One is that there's the discretion with respect to your proprietary role as the owner of the property and how you're going to negotiate that. And then there's the discretionary role you have in interpreting the plan provision. And I'm making both arguments. I'm making the argument that from a regulatory standpoint and interpreting your plan provision, you could say, under the facts of this case, where the city is a necessary party to the accomplishment of the project, we're going to interpret this housing policy more broadly and, or I should say, perhaps more stringently than we would if it were an individual applicant. When the city is a party to it, when the city has to be there to make it happen, then encouraging a range of rents and prices takes on a different meaning.
And just to be clear, Mr. Noren, when you say affordable housing, what are you referring to, and what's the mix that you believe that the city should be considering?
I think that the city needs to I don't have a number to offer you. I'm not going to propose, for example, that it be something that would qualify for private activity bonds. I think it's something that needs to happen in a discussion with the folks at the city who are best equipped to analyze what's out there in the vicinity for affordable housing and what the needs are. Our members, particularly janitors and security folks, are making in the neighborhood of $20,000 to $30,000 a year. Other folks at $40,000 a year, maybe a little bit more than that, I think they're squeezed out by this sort of project, and there's limited availability downtown for those folks as well. So it may be appropriate. The standard is we'd like to see affordable housing, but what the policy says is a range of rents and prices. And we don't have a number for you today. What we're saying is that you need to do something to provide a greater range of prices and rents. And we would be happy to work with the city to help come up with some numbers if we move in that direction.
Okay, great.
The last point I'd like to make, and you'll hear a little bit on this, related to this from Griselda, has to do with the procedural issue of who hears the master plan in the city of Portland. I have some technical legal arguments. I understand staff doesn't agree with them, and I assume the city attorney probably doesn't agree with them either, but I think that they're valid arguments to be raised about who should be deciding master plans if what you're looking at is these broader comprehensive plan policies rather than architectural standards, because your design commission is industry insiders, and they do a great job of looking at architectural issues. Our point is that they are not the ones who should be looking at the application of comprehensive plan policies.
We interrupted you a number of times, so if you have some other points that you didn't get a chance to make that you want to sum up, please go ahead.
If I could just very briefly on the Design Commission, and having spoken some about affordable housing, while we were at that hearing, we watched the Design Commission take a project through hours of grueling discussion about whether or not this affordable housing project could occur. You know, the federal law requires you to do an analysis of impediments to affordable housing. I just think it might be helpful if somebody has a word with the Design Commission about how they approach some of these hearings, because that wasn't right the way that hearing went that night.
Other questions, Mr. Noren? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mayor Hales, before you move on, I'm going to see if your memory is any better than mine. It seemed to me that while I was on the Planning Commission and you were the commissioner in charge here, that we had a tax abatement project in, I think it was Old Town, where the Planning Commission was encouraging the affordable housing and the not affordable housing to be mixed, and the applicant chose to have an affordable building and a not affordable building. Does this ring a bell with you?
Right.
And we decided, I think the Planning Commission, I think the council at that time upheld that no, we couldn't in fact, even in a single project with a tax abatement, require that it all be mixed up. So I think it has been, and that was a long time ago for those of you who was.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of that specific case, but that's why I was raising that question, is I think this would be a new policy. Granted, you've made an argument that there's a special hook in this case, I get it, but that would be a new policy to say whether on a district or on a building basis we're going to start requiring a certain performance level of affordability in a building as a condition of approval.
Of course, I'm reminded that on certain of our tax abatements, you know, you're only eligible for them if you meet all the criteria and 20% of the units are set aside. But that's the specific program. And if you choose...
Discretionary.
The developer gets to choose whether that is a good deal in order to get a 10-year abatement on the property taxes. But you go into the relationship knowing that that's what you want to do, and then there are conditions.
Okay. Great. Now we'll take supporters of the appellant in order, and I think you have a sign-up sheet.
Yes, we do. I show three people signed up. I'm going to go with the first two because I believe they need the interpreter to have a seat.
Okay.
I'll go with Adela Maza and Griselda Telez.
Okay, come on up, please. If you need another seat, just grab one and drag it up.
Buenas tardes, consejos de la ciudad de Portland y alcalde Charlie Hills. Me llamo Adela Maza.
Good afternoon, Portland City Council and Mayor Charlie Hills. My name is Adela Maza.
Soy miembro de SEIU Local 49. Yo soy una inmigrante de Guatemala. Hace 30 años que me mudé a Portland en busca de una mejor vida.
I am a member of SEIU Local 49. I am an immigrant from Guatemala. About 30 years ago, I moved from Portland seeking a better way of life.
Yo tengo dos trabajos en el centro de Portland. En la mañana trabajo en un hotel, ayudo en los desayunos, y en la noche soy janitor de ABM limpiando edificios.
I work two jobs in Portland City Center. In the mornings, I work at a hotel in downtown. I help with the breakfasts there. At night, I work as a janitor for ABM, cleaning buildings.
Vivo en Gresham, vivía antes en la Hathaway y la 15, pero aunque trabajaba dos trabajos, no podía pagar la renta para seguir viviendo allí.
I live in Gresham. I used to live on 15th and Hawthorne, but even though I worked two jobs, I could not continue to pay the rent to live there.
Me mudé para Gresham porque es un lugar más barato. Yo sé que la mayoría de mis compañeros de trabajo en el hotel y los janitor tampoco pueden vivir en el centro de Portland.
I moved to Gresham because it's a place that is cheaper. I know that the majority of my coworkers that work in the hotel and janitors cannot afford to live there either in the Portland City Center.
Ellos tienen que vivir afuera viajando desde lugares como Gresham, Hillsboro, y Aloha.
They have to continue to live on the outsides, traveling from places like Gresham, Hillsboro, and Aloha.
Yo gano para mí misma, mi hija y mis nietos, basado en mi sueldo, tengo que tomar decisiones difíciles, pagando la renta, comida, y comprando materiales de escuela para mis nietos.
I earn for myself, my daughter, and my grandchildren. Based on my income, I have to make difficult decisions, paying rent, food, buying materials for school, and for my grandchildren.
Trabajando de noche en el centro significa que yo salgo a las 2 de la mañana, y para esa hora no hay transportación.
Working at night in the center means that I have to sometimes get out at 2 a.m. And at that time or at that hour, there is no transportation.
Vivo afuera de la ciudad. Si no me lleva un compañero de trabajo, tengo que esperar hasta las 4 de la mañana para tomar el primer tren que sale. Tengo que esperar en lugares como Subway porque no hay otros lugares que estén abiertos.
I live outside the city. If a coworker does not take me to work, I have to wait until 4 a.m. to take the first train that goes out. I have to wait in places like Subway because there are no other places that are open.
Cada noche hay trabajadores como yo que salen del trabajo y no hay transporte. Yo veo a ellos sufriendo en el frío.
Every night, there are other workers like myself that leave work and there's no transportation. I see them suffering out in the cold.
En algunas ocasiones he estado en situaciones aterradoras mientras espero el comienzo del servicio de los autobuses. Si la gente trabajadora como yo pudiera vivir en el centro, tendría un impacto enorme para nosotros y nuestras familias.
In some occasions, I have been in scary situations while waiting for the first service, for the first bus services. If workers like myself could live in this Portland City Center, it would have an enormous impact for us and our families.
Necesitamos una ciudad justa y equitativa para todos. No solamente los afortunados buscamos apoyo del Consejo de la Ciudad para ayudarnos a construir una ciudad donde la gente tenga acceso a trabajo bueno, seguro, médico y vivienda accesible.
We need a city that's just and equitable for all. Not only for those that are fortunate. We look for support from the City Council to help us construct a city where the people have access to good jobs, health insurance, and accessible housing.
La gente trabajadora y trabajadores de sueldos bajos merecen vivir cerca donde trabajamos. El centro de Portland no debe ser solamente para los ricos. Yo pido en nombre de las familias trabajadoras a través de Portland que la ciudad de Portland asegure que este edificio y estos similares tengan viviendas accesibles.
The people that work and workers with low income deserve to live close to where we work. The Portland City Center should not only be for the rich. And I ask in the name of the families that are workers through Portland, through the city of Portland, that Portland can make sure that this building and others similar can have accessible housing.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Yes.
Buenas tardes, miembros del Consejo de la Ciudad de Portland y el alcalde. Mi nombre es Griselda Telles. Yo trabajo como janitor en un edificio de oficinas en el centro de Portland.
Good afternoon, members of Portland City Council and Mayor. My name is Griselda Telles. I work as a janitor in a building, office building in the city of Portland.
Trabajo para la compañía Township United. Yo vivo en Beaverton y tengo que manejar todas las tardes al centro de Portland para limpiar las oficinas, al igual que mis co-trabajadores, compañeros de trabajo.
I work for a company called Township United. I live in Beaverton and I have to drive all the afternoons to the Portland City Center to clean offices as well as my coworkers.
Tengo dos hijos de 16 y 17 años. He vivido en Oregon durante 13 años y me mudé para acá para en busca de un mejor trabajo y sueldo y porque aquí vivían mis familiares.
I have two children of 16 and 17. I have lived in Portland during my 13 years and I moved here to Oregon to find a better job and better salary for my family to live here.
Soy miembro de SAU Local 49. Mis compañeros de trabajo y yo estamos aquí hoy porque creemos en buenos empleos y viviendas accesible para todos los trabajadores.
I'm a member of SEIU Local 49. My coworkers and I are here because we believe in better employment and accessible living or housing for all workers.
Creemos que este edificio no se puede construir sin vivienda accesible para que los trabajadores con salarios más bajos que trabajan en el centro de Portland puedan vivir cerca de su trabajo.
We believe that this building cannot be constructed without accessible housing for those that work with a low income, that work in the city of Portland, that work in the Portland City Center so that they can live close to where they work.
Muchos de mis compañeros de trabajo asistieron a la reunión de la Comisión de Diseño de Portland el 21 de noviembre. Solicité tiempo libre de mi segundo trabajo como trabajadora de limpieza en un hotel y me dirigí al centro para asistir a la reunión.
Many of my coworkers attended the Portland Commission design meeting on the 21st of November. I requested time off for my second job as a cleaning person in a hotel, and I directed myself to this Portland City Center for the meeting.
Nuestro entendimiento era que la reunión sería donde pudiéramos entender por qué.